You are listening to Eastside Radio Podcast.
89.7 FM, Eastside Radio.
Okay, well, today I have the honour of being joined in the studio by athletic royalty. And that being the case, maybe it's appropriate to play a little fanfare. Well, Bronte Campbell, OAM, is a four-time Olympian, a triple Olympic gold medalist, and a former world champion in the 50 and the 100-metre freestyle. She's won 27 international medals over the course of her 11-year career, and I'm delighted to welcome her to the studio. Bronte Campbell, welcome to Monday Drive.
Thank you so much for having me, Alan. I've never been played in by trumpets before, so there's a first time for everything.
Well, you deserve every bit of the trumpet. have you had a swim today?
I have had a swim today. Swam off the boat ramp this morning, and water clarity, beautiful water temperature. It's 20 degrees sounds warm when you're in it for a bit, not that warm.
So. Oh, really? Well, it's now 20 degrees here at Bondi, 29 degrees out of the water. Is that too cold for an Olympic swim?
Yes. So if I do pool swimming, right? So I'm not doing open water swimming. Olympic temperature has to be between 26.8 and 27.8 degrees.
That's bath temperature.
Bath temperature is more around 40 degrees. You think water always feels a bit colder than it sounds.
Right.
Like if you think about a 20 degree day versus 20 degree water, because of the density of it, it's actually a bit colder. And the colder the water is, the denser it is as well. So that's why we have like a specific degree that you have to swim in, because your speed will change based on the temperature of the water.
You said this morning you went for a swim?
Yes.
Yeah. Is it possible for you to go for a swim without racing? In other words, do you like getting in the water and flapping around like most of us?
I mean, that's what I'm doing at the moment. I'm not competing. Flapping. I'm not competing this year. I'm just flapping. I'm just racing the fishes and just snorkel around the boat ramps.
And I bet you're beating them too, are you?
I tried to catch a fish today, but they're quite fast, to be honest.
quite fast. So it is possible for you to get in the water and just flap around and enjoy the water and not feel as though you need to beat somebody or catch up with that fish in front of you that...
Yeah, absolutely. I love being in the water. That's really where my Olympic career started, was just I absolutely loved
swimming. In the water, yeah.
Like I just loved it so much and pursued it to the highest degree with a degree of perfectionism, but never lost the love for it. So I love getting in the salt water for that reason, because there's nothing to really measure against. The water's different every day. There's waves. The tides are different. The clarity's different. The temperature's different. You can just sort of do your own thing. If I'm getting in a pool, I know what every stroke should be like. I know what time I should be doing. So you can really measure yourself in a pool. So I really like swimming in the ocean at the moment, because there's nothing to measure. You can just relax and enjoy it.
Well, it's interesting because you said that you started swimming a very long time ago. Just remind us, you were born in Malawi.
I was, yeah. I was born in Malawi in Africa.
Yeah. Now, correct me if my geography is wrong, but Malawi is landlocked.
It is landlocked, but a third of it is a lake. So it's actually got the ninth largest lake in the world. A third of the whole country is water. So...
But you've just told us that swimming in a pool is quite different from swimming in something like that. In fact, I wouldn't have thought that it was an ideal start for someone who's going to perform on the world stage to start swimming in a pond.
It's a big pond. It's a 350-kilometer pond, but it definitely wasn't. Like, I went back to Malawi this year and looking around at a place that's very low infrastructure and not a lot of opportunity. It's a very long way from the shores of Lake Malawi to the Olympic podium. But I was very fortunate to be able to immigrate to Australia when I was 7 years old. My older sister was nine. And
well, hang on. Before you did that,
yeah,
your mum, she was a bit of a water baby too, wasn't she?
She was. My mum was a synchronized swimmer.
Synchronized swimmer.
Now called artistic swimming, in South Africa. So
why did that not have appeal to you? Why did you need to race? Why didn't you perform acrobatics in the water?
I mean, swimming fast is just so much fun. I actually did do a little bit of artistic swimming when I was very young, but in the Malawi National Championships, I came fourth out of four people. And
fourth out of four?
Fourth out of four, and one of the judges was my mom, and I still only got 3 out of 10. So
oh,
I don't think I really had a calling in that. I will just say it was the Open Championships, and I was 7, so or 6 even at the time. So
had you at that stage been swimming normal swimming strokes?
Not really, just learning how to swim them. I think I was only 6 at that time, so I sort of learnt the process of how you swim all the other strokes, but I wasn't doing any sort of training.
So did your mum push you into the pool and say, you're going to swim?
No, definitely not. I don't think any parent would actually like to have a swimmer as a child.
Right.
Just in terms of the hours that you end up having to do.
Your mum's got 2 of you.
Yeah, she does. Yeah, she does. So I think we grew up loving the pool. And I mean, we lived in a very tropical place in Africa. And our backyard pool was sort of how we cooled off. I would like to say there was air conditioning. There wasn't air conditioning. There was often not power. Wow. So we grew up in and around the water, and it was a really special place for us.
Okay. What is it actually like to qualify for a race that you know that everybody is watching? Specifically, I'm referring to the June 2024 Women's 100 Relay.
What is it like?
Actually, I don't even want you to answer the question because you've already answered it once, and here's what you said last time.
Gold in this relay team in 2016. Gold in this relay team in Tokyo 2020. You weren't quite sure if you were going to grab a spot on this team for Paris, but you've done it.
This is one of the hardest spots in the world to grab. The women's 100 freestyle in Australia is so much depth, and you can see how much it means to all of us to be part of this team. We're really proud of what we've built here, and I'm so grateful to be part of the team again.
Well, that was then. What about now? How does it feel? What emotion do you have now thinking about that race?
Yeah, it's a really special thing. Qualifying for the Olympics is the sort of dream I had from when I was 7 and I first moved to Australia, and then
after you came fourth in the synchronized swimming.
Yes, after that, after I put my synchronized swimming career behind me, I decided to move on to onto swimming as fast as possible. And I think I dreamt about going to one Olympic Games and what that could possibly be like. And so last year to then have qualified for my fourth Olympic Games, which is just so far above and beyond what I could have even dreamt of when I was 7. Mm. And, you know, when you're a kid, you have quite a big imagination.
Yeah.
Even imagining that from Malawi, I could imagine myself at the Olympics is quite a feat of imagination.
Mm.
And then to actually have achieved that multiple times over is just really, really special. So it's definitely something that I'm still grateful that I've had the opportunity to do that.
Yeah. And do you believe that you've been in the water preparing for those Olympic trials every single day? Is there any day that you take off? I mean, at the peak of your Olympic achievements?
Yeah, so I sort of did something a little bit different for those Paris Olympics after Tokyo Olympics in 2021. If everyone remembers, they were delayed a year by COVID.
Yeah, COVID. Mm.
So I ended up taking 18 months away from the water during that time. I was surfing during that time instead, just to maintain that sort of arm fitness and tension on a few of my injuries that require a little bit of load to always go through them. And so that's the longest time I've ever had off since I was 7. Mm. That's the longest time I've ever been away from that really intense training environment. So it was,
and it is intense, isn't it?
It's very intense. I mean, because I also have a lot of injuries, my time to manage all of that is probably more than anyone else's. Like if I'm training for 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours at night, I have to get to the pool an hour and a half before I get in the water and then stay for another hour afterwards to load my injuries up so they're ready to go, and then deload it at the end. So I end up being at the pool for sort of two blocks of 4 hours, which is 8 hours a day. So it's quite a lot. It ends up being your lifestyle as opposed to a job. So to be able to take a break from that after Tokyo and then come back to it for Paris was was really, really special to have that time and space, which I'd never had before.
Yeah, a lot of people associate injuries with elite sport, but you've just outlined an entire regime of preparation to get through your injuries for the competition. What motivates you to do just that? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're in the water for 2 hours training, and you've got another 2 hours, one and a half at the front end and another one at the back end. You've had everything from shoulder injuries, calf tears and everything else. But a lot of the people that you're competing against do not have those injuries. So what is it that motivates you to push through them and win as much as you did? And again, I don't want you to answer it. I just want you to hear what you said last time.
This journey for you has been extraordinary since Tokyo. It certainly hasn't been easy. Talk us through not only your mental prowess of overcoming the physical that has happened to you since Tokyo.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a very different journey for me. I had 18 months off and then wasn't sure if I was going to come back. But this right here, the moment of qualifying for the team and then getting to go over with the girls, that's the thing that brought me back to the pool. And all the hard work and the calf tear and the shoulder and all of that is worth it just for the moment when you get to step out together wearing green and gold.
And is it the same now? Is that the same answer you would give now? Isn't this a great interview? You don't even have to answer the question.
I know, it's wonderful. We could have just pre-recorded everything. No. Yes, I think it is the same answer. When you've got this really big goal that you're chasing, there's obviously a lot of things that you're sacrificing along the way and a lot of obstacles that you're overcoming. But I have a drive and a willingness to do that. There's a lot of creativity that comes when you're dealing with injury. You have to be quite creative. You have to think on your feet and constantly be adapting. And as much as I would prefer not to be injured, I quite enjoy that process. As soon as something's not working, we have to figure out how to make it work.
Does the word masochism come into your
no,
mind?
No. And I would just say, like, after my shoulder is my main injury, that's a problem. And after that injury first came in 2016, so after 8 years of managing it, I'd say this prep that I had for the Paris Olympics was the least pain I've ever been in, because I've finally understood exactly what that injury needs at all times, and it comes from multiple angles of attack, and it's taken 8 years to figure that out. So
and when you were swimming this morning in the pond saying hello to the fish, were you in any pain?
No, that's not painful. If I swim the bay, which I do from time to time, if I do that without warming up and warming down properly, that will be painful. If I go for a surf that's too long, that will be painful. Yeah.
Wow. Gee, a surf that's too long. Ooh. You mentioned just a moment ago that you're a very driven person, but it's clear that at least some of your motivation comes from Kate, your sister, who's a mere 2 years older than you are. When Kate was pipped at the post by one ridiculous 100th of a second, a margin that I think most of us would find difficult to even conceptualize, 1/100th of a second. How did you cope with her disappointment?
It's always been Kate and Bronte together. How difficult has it been for you watching Kate miss the final tonight by 1/100th of a second, but also knowing you've got a job to do?
Yeah, absolutely. I felt devastated for my sister this morning. But she is absolutely incredible. I mean, she held this individual spot in the 100 freestyle for 11 years. I think that's got to be a record in Australia. It's such a hard thing to do. And I just really want to pay homage to what an incredible athlete she is.
There you go. What do you reckon?
What I reckon. I was quite upset there. I remember being asked that question. I do not remember my response to it. So it's nice to hear it. It's always been a beautiful thing in my sport, is that I get to compete with and against my sister. It means that sometimes there is this joy amplified thing that happens when if both of us do super well. And for many years, I think for 8 years straight, we held the 50 freestyle spot. So we were finishing first and second in the country in the 50 freestyle for 8 or 9 years in a row. So like, you touch the wall, you'd both be elated. And we've had that on a national stage, and we've had that on an international stage, both when we're in relays and when we've been on the podium together at World Championships or at Commonwealth Games. So it's there's this element of joy amplified, but then there's also this other really difficult thing to deal with, is if you do well and someone that you're really close to doesn't, that's obviously very difficult to manage, and you have to you really have to put up a little bit of a barrier and focus on what you need to do.
That's
and
right.
that was definitely one of those moments. I think you can probably hear in that interview, it's probably the first time I've even thought about it properly, because I would have seen that Kate had missed the final in the morning, and I would have just had to put up a wall
right.
like straight away and not spend any energy on it, because I only had a few hours before I needed to come back and compete in the final. So you can sort of hear in that answer, like the moment where I really start thinking about it even for the first time. And it's not like I went home after the heats and was crying myself to sleep. Like I literally just went home and turned off all emotion in that direction, because I didn't have the time to feel it in that moment.
Yeah, absolutely extraordinary. 1/100th of a second. Is that ridiculous?
It's
don't you think there could have been an error?
Well, it's an error one way or the other. Like it's
yes, but she could have got in by 1/100th
yeah,
of a second.
Yeah, I know, and that's sort of what happens. What we do is a completely stupid thing. Like we train for our whole lives, and it comes down to a race that lasts for less than a minute and your margins are less than 1/100th
of a second.
So like if you put it to someone as a business proposition, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but it's something beyond the result that's important about it. There's something about the trying and striving for something that's a really big goal that's quite satisfying. And I think the pursuit of it is worth something, even if you don't get the results in the end. And if you miss out by 1/100th of a second,
ridiculous.
It can be a difficult thing to come to terms with. But there's value beyond just the result, which I think is what we all rely on.
Yeah. It's 29 minutes past four. We've only just touched the surface, so we're never going to finish. But you're going to make havoc of my run sheet. But anyway, that's another thing. There comes a time when your body, as you've said, has something to say about you competing at such a ridiculously elite level. And after that point, you need to concentrate on something else. Now, you've completed a business degree in public relations. Tell us where that has led you professionally.
Yeah, so all the while I was competing, I was slowly completing my university degree.
during the time you were competing?
Yeah. So I qualified for my first Olympics as I was leaving high school. So I was just turned 17 when I qualified. I just turned 18 by the time I got to the games. So it was, I was very young, and then I went straight into doing university part-time. So I very slowly crawled my way through that degree.
And surely the university would have given you some dispensation.
I mean, they were like, if you don't finish this quickly, you're going to have to start again. I was like, I better get it done. I think it took me 8 years to get it through.
Did they know your name?
Yeah. I mean, they were great. They were great with helping with the fact that I was barely ever in lectures and allowing me to study remotely and things like that. But there is a time where it's sort of like, if you've been studying this stuff 8 years ago, it might not be relevant anymore. So you need to like finish it up pretty quickly.
Anyway, you got there in the end, and then you started up a company. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so I have my own business now. It's called Earthletica. It's sustainable activewear. And I wasn't really aware, being that I was in activewear all the time, that most activewear is made with new, what you'd call virgin plastic. So we use recycled materials in all of our gear. Really big brands might do like one pair of shoes or one pair of tights that have some element of recycled in it, but their whole range of 50,000 SKUs will just be this new fresh plastic that then goes straight back into landfill as well. So we also partner with people to recycle it at the end of its life. So really trying to make positive difference, but also just like you got to have gear that's really good. Like I wear workout gear every single day. I've been living in it for years, so it needs to be like super high quality and like look good and feel good and be comfortable and be stylish. Otherwise, like what's the point of wearing it? It needs to go through an Olympic level workout. It can't be like baggy and saggy and all of that. So it's a very big passion project for me, because obviously I live just next to the ocean. I'm very passionate about the environment, but I'm also passionate about working out. out and feeling great while doing it.
And where is Earthletica? Is it a retail outlet or online? Or
Earthletica you can find online. You can find it. I'm sure there'll be a million links on my Instagram. But we're online, in and around Bondi. We'll start doing some pop-ups over summer. So keep an eye out for me on the boardwalk. I'm happy to chat about anything, including any questions and queries you have about your favourite workout gear.
Okay. But your talent doesn't stop there. You're also a poet.
Yes.
Now, is it true that you used to write poems and send them out to the swim team before a competition to give them motivation?
Yes. I mean, I wouldn't send it to them, but we normally have a team meeting just before competition starts. And I think I started this tradition in 2013. So I'd always write something for the team and read it to the team just before the team went out. So,
have you got a for instance for us?
Oh, it would be hard to remember one off the top of my head. But they're always like specific to the team and it's just a nice little connection piece for everyone, which is kind of nice.
All right. And they all appreciated it and that obviously spurred them on to great things.
Well, I mean, some of them might have appreciated it. If they don't, they can they can block their ears until it's done. It's just it's just a nice moment for bonding for the team, really.
You mentioned earlier that you went back to Malawi earlier this year. You've been doing a bit of travel this year, haven't you?
I've had a lot of travel this year.
You've had a bit of. Tell us, in your spare time, do you watch much TV?
I actually don't.
You don't? What about last night at about 7 o'clock?
No.
What was on last night at 7 o'clock?
I'm assuming The Amazing Race was on last night at 7 o'clock.
And tell us about your association with The Amazing Race.
Me and my lovely fiancé, Benfield, were on The Amazing Race earlier this year when we filmed it earlier this year. I actually have a confession to make. I actually haven't watched a single episode. But the finale is tonight. The finale's tonight.
Tonight? Monday night?
Yeah, we're heading to... Monday night's a good night for TV. Most people stay at home, so...
They should be listening to Monday Drive here on Eastside Radio.
Well, it's on after Drive's finished.
Oh, that's okay.
So, yeah,
that's
you finish right, and then we go into then we go into Amazing Race, and I'll head out with some of the cast, and we'll all watch it together. So tonight, I'll actually watch my first episode.
Oh, are you going to admit that? You don't admit that to them, surely.
I mean, it's just us. It's fine.
You said something about you only enjoy short races.
Yeah.
When were you knocked out of the race?
I think like three episodes in or something.
I think it was two.
I think it was three.
Oh, the first one, nobody went.
Yeah, I think the second one, nobody went. I don't know. I've actually said I haven't watched it.
Well, I was going to say, how was the experience versus watching it back on TV? But that's irrelevant because you didn't watch it. You haven't watched it back on
TV.
Yeah,
it's, I've seen a few clips online. So that's good. What's really nice about these sort of things is that you're meeting some really interesting people. The other castmates were lovely, wonderful, creative, funny people that you wouldn't get to meet otherwise. But like, I'm sort of used to a race environment being like the Olympics.
Right.
And we're talking about reality TV, which is like a different sort of produced and
overly produced.
I mean, what does overly produced? I mean, they're trying to coordinate 13 teams across a different country and
mammoth task.
It's a very big task. I'm used to there being one variable, and however well you do it, that is the only thing that's going to determine outcome. That's just not the case when you've got a crew of 160 people and they're all running around trying to get to the end of the day before timeout or whatever goes on behind the scenes. So, I sort of much prefer a straight line race than one that's got a million different factors in it.
Sure, okay. When I introduced this segment, I played a song called How Can I Forget? It's by a bloke called Benfield. Now, you're familiar with the song?
I do know that song,
and
yes.
And I believe you even know the singer.
Quite well, yes.
Quite well. How do you know him? Where did you meet and when?
Benfield is my fiancé. We met in Queensland in Brisbane when we were both living there. I actually met Benfield when I was seven. So I've known him a very long time. When I first moved to Australia, his family was one of the first families that my family met. I obviously didn't start dating him when I was seven, but
I'm glad to hear that.
A whole 15 years later, when I was in my early 20s, then we started dating.
You refer to him as something to do with a banana. best banana in the bunch?
Something like that.
Was that an insult, or was it supposed to be a pleasantry, or what did he feel about being called the best banana in a bunch?
I actually don't even think he knows that. that was on another podcast. I was trying to describe how we ended up getting together, and I was very focused on swimming in my career for a long time, and then Benfield just sort of happened, and I was talking about how. Once we started dating, it became quite a serious thing. We were dating long distance. He was living in Sydney. I was living in Brisbane at that time. So you really had to pick a good banana to get through that. And I don't know why I said that and immediately like regretted that analogy, because it brings all sort of things to mind.
Yeah, well, some people might be insulted by it, but if he doesn't know about it, he's probably listening to this right now, and you'll get to hear about it. Look, as if you didn't know, I'm speaking with Bronte Campbell, OAM, and she is a wonderful person. We have well and truly blown our time allocation. But had Benfield been here, I was going to ask him to introduce another song of his, but maybe you can do it for him.
I will. That's lovely. Paul Benfield's got a little man flu today, so he will not be in to sing the intro, but this is Only When I'm Drunk, another lovely song that he wrote actually around the time that we were first getting together. So really love this one. It came out a few years ago.
Bronte Campbell, thank you so much for coming and joining us here on Monday Drive.
Thank you, Alan.
You have been listening to Eastside Radio Podcast. For selections of more enjoyable content like this, visit our website, eastsidefm.org, and click on Podcast.